Hey everybody, on this episode of the Comic Book Exchange, we're going to see some old friends in a new situation. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking all about Preacher, next.
This is Book Circle Online, featuring in-depth discussion, insight, news, and commentary on all the world's leading book titles and their authors. And now, Book Circle Online.
Ladies and gentlemen, you may be thinking you're watching the Legends of Tomorrow After Show. That is not the case.
I'm not used to the Book Circle Online theme.
It is very jaunty.
Oh, welcome. Sit down and grab a book.
That's what it sounds like to me.
I love it.
Come on, we'll talk about books with your nerds. Look at all the nerds reading all them books.
Thank you.
They should change the theme song to that.
I would love it. Mm-hmm. Please put lyrics to that. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, that's what I just did.
From the Library of Maria Menounos. She reads all the books, all the craziest books.
Okay, sorry.
That was beautiful. Ladies and gentlemen, look at this. How much fun we're having right here. This is Comic Book Exchange, where we talk about all those four-color graphic novels and periodicals that pop up in your comic book shops every single Wednesday, or maybe on your digital storefront as well. And we talked to some of the people behind them as well. But today we're talking to a super fan of one particular series. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm one of your hosts, Frank Moran. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram, because why not? At Happy Go Jackie. What do you have to do?
Why that name, Happy Go Jackie? None of us know. He's an enigma wrapped in a mystery. I'm Dave Child. You can find me at MrDaveChild or DaveChild.com.
Dave Child.
Because my name's Dave Child.
Dave Child. Yes!
I'm excited to be here and talk about Preacher.
We're excited to have you here.
Yeah.
Because I know we've got literally one... It's like, you guys should do another show together. We have one request for that. So for that one fan.
Here you go. We're back.
We're back for one special episode here.
Talking about other comic book characters from a far dirtier book.
That's very true.
Than Legends of Tomorrow. They get more scrappy in Preacher than they do on Legends.
Very true.
Not that much. Now, although, every time we talk about Jonah Hex on Legends, it's kind of... We hope it becomes very preachery.
True.
And we kind of want that Rip and Jonah relationship to be a bit more preachery, and it hasn't gotten there yet. But
it has not. But that's what season 3s are for.
Mm. Yeah, finally.
Lex Michael is right here as well.
He's also here.
Ooh, Lexi.
And the rest.
And yes,
yes, I am here as well. I am Lex Michael. I'm all over social media at the Lex Michael.
You okay, buddy?
Yeah.
You
doing okay?
I went on a journey just now, you guys.
Yeah.
I went to my own private little island. I had a mental image of a guy who has a butt for a face.
Oh.
Right.
Yeah. And I stared into it, and it stared back.
So you also are the one person who hasn't read Preacher.
Yeah, so I am here. Why am I here? It's a good question. I am here as a representative of everybody listening who has heard of Preacher,
right,
is aware of its reputation, but is unsure as to why it should now become a priority on their list, the lengthy list of books that I assume everybody has under their pillow. They sleep with it every night. Why Preacher should move up on the list. So as you guys are spinning these descriptions of Preacher and what you love about it, I'm going to be chiming in and asking you to elaborate on certain points, both for my own personal benefit and the benefit of those people who are listening to this show who are curious but haven't delved in themselves.
Cool.
I really hope that you just pick the most minute things to have us elaborate on.
Yeah. Wait, what happened on page 4, panel 5?
Why was Tulip wearing a yellow shirt?
Why does this tumbleweed not resemble that tumbleweed? And what thematic substance can we draw from the discrepancy in tumbleweed appearances?
That's a bit of a spoiler to talk about the tumbleweeds.
Yeah, we don't want to give away too much.
Yeah.
No, speaking of that, but we will give away the last member of our panel. For free. If you come over here to AfterBuzz right now,
you can miss those sweet transitions of yours, right? Oh, boy.
He's just a sweet transition. And I am right here. I'm not transitioning at the moment, but I am Lucretia Lyon, guys. You can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one.
And of course, folks, you can like us on Facebook. Give us those 5 stars on iTunes, because the one, the only, the irreplaceable Lex Michael needs those to live.
If you want Lex to keep on living, that's right. Give those stars. We just talked about how
this
Frank,
became a bit.
Frank
somehow.
Started that on Legends, and now every single show I have with Lex, he has to talk about eating.
So I'm not, because it happens on almost every other show that I'm on now. I'm on shows with Tari Miller, and I think he's picked up this bit as well and is running with it. So I feel a weird, an obligation, a burden, if you will, to continue this bit. But because we're continuing the bit, yes, folks, I will die without these 5-star reviews.
Right.
I hope they name this disease after me once we distill it to a specific list of symptoms. Once they do so, I'm going to sell the disease and buy fancy hats. Right. That's the long con.
I love it. Ooh, just so the folks at home can understand, you know, the trials and tribulations you face with this disease, give us just one symptom that you have to endure on a daily basis.
Please.
I sure do feel sad inside.
See?
Right there. And you guys can donate to the cause.
Damn it.
Who doesn't need the occasional pat on the back in the form of a 5-star iTunes review to feel a little okay about themselves in a given day? Who among us cannot make the same claim?
I've got it a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. Fill the hole in his heart with 5-star reviews. That's the only thing that'll do it.
That'll do it. And as always, folks, you can go subscribe to the YouTube channel, give it a thumbs up while you're there. And Lucretia, our resident oracle, has got her laptop up and open, which means that chat is up. So feel free to chime in about anything you love about comics or anything that we'll be talking about this episode. As mentioned, we're going to be talking about Preacher. But before we do that, just a couple little news items to get into. With Mr. Dave Child here, we want to hear his opinions more than any
others.
Yes.
Everyone does.
There you go.
That's how I feel. Like, I'll be sitting at home alone watching TV at like 2 in the morning, and I'll think to myself, I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight because I don't know what Dave Child thinks about what I'm watching.
I really need you to stop calling me at 2 in the morning.
But like, how else am I going to sleep, Dave?
Listen, I just got a girlfriend and it's getting weird. That she's noticing all these calls at 2 in the morning, and I'm like, I'm sorry, he has a hole in his heart.
But like, your commentary,
not enough 5-star reviews.
Your commentary is so soothing.
Well, give you that commentary every night.
It's like I'm being rocked.
Just go to bed sooner.
To
is all I'm asking.
In a branch, in a tree.
Sure.
A tree called Dave Child.
Oh, look at that. So, ladies and gentlemen, we know that DC Comics, based that originally out of New York, they've been moving westward, all their operations. And one operation that hadn't moved out yet, that was Mad Magazine, been based out of New York for the longest time since its origin, but finally they've moved out west. They've joined the rest of the DC collective out here. And Bill Morrison, a writer, has now been named executive editor. We got a nice little lovely there caricature with Alfred E. Newman. Now,
which one's which?
Who here on the panel has been a fan of Mad Magazine growing up?
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
I used to read it in Hastings, you know, because I was too cheap to buy it. I would just be so excited to go read it, and I loved, you know, when they did Mad TV and all these things. So, I mean, all I want to know is, when are they hiring?
Yeah.
Right.
But I think all of us, having loved it and read it, the one thing you want to do when you get a copy, whether you see it at a store or you buy it, is you want to go to the last page on the back cover.
Fold.
And do the folding. Yeah.
Yes.
I, like, never really, even as I got it as a kid, I hardly read the actual thing. I just looked for the Sergio,
the
little
doodles?
Drawings, doodles in the brackets and the corners and all the free space amongst it. Those are always my favorite.
And
parts.
Is that what inspired the doodles for the Legends of Tomorrow after show?
Sure, yeah. My
other
favorite doodles. And if you haven't received those doodles yet, they're on their way. I hate those doodles.
Now, admittedly, I have not read a current issue of Mad Magazine in probably, I'd say, like, 5-10 years.
It's been a while for me as well. I remember when I was younger, like around the age when I was really getting into Weird Al Yankovic, getting into Mad Magazine for a lot of the same reasons. I feel like the sense of humor is very similar. And I remember not keeping up necessarily with issues of Mad Magazine, but I remember every time that I stumbled across one where they would do like the big movie parodies that they would do in their book. Like that, every time I found one of those, usually by accident, I'd get really excited, and then I would just sit and I would pore over it extensively.
Right. Although Mad gets a lot more blue and
than Weird Al does, for sure.
But not as bad as Cracked, which is kind of why I liked Mad over Cracked, because it kind of stayed more in the weird realm than the kind of than the kind of just gross sex humor
right.
that ended up happening. Not that I don't mind gross sex humor. We're here to talk about Preacher.
That's right.
Which is a lot of gross sex humor.
Now, admittedly, I'm a sucker for like the early days of Matt. So anytime like DC is like reprinted them in archive editions.
Right.
Anytime they do like a reprint of that, I almost feel compelled to get it. When you get to see like that early Harvey Kurtzman art.
Yeah.
Like Super Duper Man, stuff like that.
I feel like now could be a golden age for Matt because of Trump and everything. It feels like they have a lot they can work with kind of the current state of things. It's more stuff to make fun of. So.
Oh, so well.
Well, I also wonder too how. Now, maybe this has happened 50 times in the last year, and I just missed it. But how many times have we seen, say, like the Alfred E. Newman character mashed up with like the DC Pantheon in a world where like a Batman Elmer Fudd book came out today? I think
yes.
Yeah.
Where that apparently is pretty good. When do I see Alfred E. Newman mix it up with The Dark Knight or The Green Lantern or I don't know
Superman?
Glorious Godfrey.
Glorious,
I think I was going to go for like one of the new gods or like Granny Goodness. When do I see Alfred E. Newman mix it up with those
Granny
cats?
Granny Goodness. Getting tortured by Granny Goodness. And not quite like, he just, what me worry?
That's right.
Can't torture him.
Well, they did do a line, DC Collectibles did a line of Alfred E. Newman figures dressed up as the various different superheroes.
Right.
Mm.
So. He is kind of a mixpickalick.
No, what? He's better.
Frank
he's
hates.
Better. He's better.
Mixy-spinny.
Yeah, he's got a severe axe to grind.
Do not enjoy
all fifth dimensional imps are like. That's...
He is a fifth dimensional imp, though.
Yeah.
Alfred E.
No, Johnny Thunder's Thunderbolt. That's the only one I'll accept. Everybody else, hit the bricks,
Mixy's
guys.
Mixy's great.
Yeah,
no,
I like Mixy.
No.
Oh, it's a chance for him to go all cartoony. I love it.
Oh,
anyways,
all right, fine. switching over to its distinguished competitor there, Marvel Comics, they just, much like DC Rebirth did last year, the big Rebirth rebranding, kind of recovering over the missteps of DC's New 52, Marvel, who's been facing some sales slumps, have decided to kind of go back and embrace the old, with hopefully a hint of the new, with Marvel's Legacy. So they've basically, as you can see some of the artwork there, they've kind of, the idea is to take back some of the traditional numbering on a lot of the series that, so like Spider-Man, I believe Deadpool, Captain America, all those have kind of reestablished their original numbering.
Cool.
And the idea is that we'd be seeing some new takes on these characters. I feel like the announcement, though, has not been as well received as Marvel had intended.
The response seemed that, like the narrative that was built around the response is like everybody was very underwhelmed. And I'm not really sure what everyone was necessarily expecting.
Can I ask what original numbering means? Is it starting from one or is it starting from the last place it left off before the numbers went away?
The idea is like every time they've kind of renumbered them, they started like at number one again. They would just kind of count those from whatever the biggest number was in the series. Then they would just tack on all those like reboots numbers onto that.
God.
So now
that sounds so confusing. Even just what you just said.
So are we now going back to much in the way that when DC launched the Rebirth initiative, Action Comics and Detective Comics went back to their original. They went back to number 900.
Yes.
Whatever it was. That's what you're referring to. Basically, the same ideas. We're going back to whatever issue number we were on. However many years ago and however many reboots ago it was. It's like, I do get it. There's a lot about Legacy, much in the way that there's a lot about Rebirth, that I completely understand from a business perspective.
Right.
But I also don't know how now all of a sudden we're going back to issue Amazing Spider-Man, issue 952, unless you're a new reader that's actively following what the intention behind this reboot is. I feel like if you see that on the shelf,
it's just going to get confusing.
You're going to be like, there's 950 something issues of this that I got to go back and catch up on now.
Yeah.
Well, and there also wouldn't be very easy, because it'd be one thing if there were actually 952 real sequentially numbered issues, but when you have all those various reboots that are being factored into it, they had a spinoff in volume 3 was in 2014, and so that went for 12 issues before they rebooted again.
Oh,
and then,
man.
You're like, now
that's terrible.
I got to track all these down as well.
Because you're going to be like, okay, 952, so I got to find 951, but it doesn't exist.
No.
So why? That's terrible.
It's especially if you want to go back and fill yourself in on a story arc, the threads of which have been running for decades, you almost can't do that. You won't know which way to go unless you spend a couple hours with Google figuring out what volume of which has which numbering that leads into which other volume with this other numbering.
I wish it was just asterisk one or something. I wish it was just... I don't know, something like that to kind of restart, because it's just going to get confusing. That's why I like series that are just like Preacher.
Yeah.
The continuity is just, they have like 75 issues, something like
that.
Yeah,
it's not a lot.
And then you're fine. You're done. You don't have to worry about issue number 900.
Right.
It's great.
Well, certainly with Marvel Legacy, the idea is that hopefully you'd kind of reboot this series, kind of freshen it up, and maybe get in new creators, announce a really wide variety of different titles that maybe you didn't have before. And basically, the only two that they really haven't had is just a retake on Spirits of Vengeance and Marvel 2-in-1. But otherwise, it's pretty much all the same characters, all the same titles, with a lot of the same creators.
Right.
Does that get you guys excited to want to go and jump back in and read these Marvel books? Numbering aside.
I mean, I like all new everything on Marvel. I love to like kind of jump in and on all new stories. And it does also sound like they're done with their Civil War number 5, Civil War number something.
Yeah.
So it feels like they're kind of moving off of those kind of standbys, which is good. It kind of feels like they're, okay, let's think of something new. Let's expand and go kind of back to the original. So that does feel better.
All right.
From a business perspective, it makes a ton of sense. And if their intention is to open the door to a lot of new, exciting creative teams, I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. I want to know, how much are you guys keeping up with any of the Marvel books that are going on right now? For example, I mean, the big one, obviously their big event that's still going on right now is Secret Empire. Have any of you guys read any of Secret Empire?
I have. And it's been frustrating.
How so?
I want it to be better. I feel like it's, especially with the Nick Spencer run in Captain America and Captain America Sam Wilson, it was a lot of slow burn to get to this point.
Yes.
And now that we're here, I guess some things are happening, but it's just, I don't know if I want to see just like, you know, a fascist Captain America.
See, and that's completely fair, and I feel like that's been most of the response to this story, I think, is largely response not to the story they're actually telling, but to the very idea of what the story is. I've been keeping up with it, and though I understand to a point that this story was always going to court a great deal of controversy, I feel like it's a bit of a shame that that's what almost the entire conversation has become about, because even though I'm not going to sit here and say all of it's completely working for me like gangbusters, I do applaud that they're doing some really audacious stuff that is not necessarily the most palatable stuff, but it doesn't feel like they're playing it safe.
Right.
And that's maybe my biggest fear about Legacy, is if they can do for Marvel what DC did with Rebirth, I'm all for it. Rebirth has given us a bunch of books that I'm really digging. But there's a part of me that worries we're not doing it necessarily for creative reasons, we're doing it because we want to start playing it a little bit safer.
Yeah, it's because I feel like with Secret Empire, I'm not one of those that, like when Captain America was first revealed to be an agent of Hydra, that all of a sudden is like, what have you done to this character? It's like, I'm willing to let a creator get to the end of the story before I can judge the whole thing. He certainly has a story in mind, he has an ending in mind, and he wants to get to it, so I feel like I need to give him the ability to tell that story before I can fully judge it. But I also have to admit that I'm not really enjoying the story as it's being told thus far.
Right. I mean, and that's fair as well.
Yeah. So our last bit here is that Dean Devlin, for you Librarians fans, they're coming out with a comic book series for that. And I know Dave Child is excited, because if anybody loves Librarians, it is Dave Child.
Oh, man, the Dewey Decimals. I mean, what more can you say? There's so many Deweys in their decimal places.
Hey, Bruce Campbell was Santa Claus on there. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, I hear Librarians is really good. I've yet to watch it. But my mom loves it, and it's one of those that I think I could actually watch with her rather than, like, Bones or something.
Is Librarians the one... Is that the one that Noah something from
Wiley.
ER? Noah Wiley, yes, that's the one he's on.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, it's like a spinoff there where all of a sudden, instead of just him, he's got, like, a team. And he's not in it as much. He's kind of more of just, like, the figurehead that kind of pops in, I believe, right?
Yeah, like, I, you know, have watched a couple episodes because my mom likes it too, Dave, and a lot of my friends do. And,
mom,
yeah, it's a real funny, it's a funny show, and Rebecca Romijn, John Larroquette, it's got a good cast.
Yeah.
That's why I was like, oh, this will probably be interesting.
They're tapping into that mom comic book fandom that we've yet to tap into.
Like Lucifer did.
Yeah.
Books.
Mommy books.
Oh.
Hashtag everybody.
And I'm definitely offending Librarian fans. I hear it's really good. I definitely like stuff that's kind of in the same realm as it, like Eureka.
Yeah.
And those type of shows, I feel like they kind of exist in that same sort of fun adventure kind of stuff. So I've been meaning to catch up on it. It's just one of those that's so many things to watch.
No, that's very true. In this age, there's just so little time to read everything you want to read or watch everything that you want to watch. So at best, you can just try to do as best you can. And then if you get the occasional really big push from a friend of yours, like, you got it, whatever you do, stop whatever else you're doing and watch or read this thing.
Yeah, and Tanya in the chat here really enjoys The Librarian. She says, Christian Kane is great in it. And I kind of forgot he was in there.
He's
from Angel.
Okay.
Yeah, and I did own his country music album.
I remember him playing
Given it away since then.
I don't own CDs anymore. They didn't make it to California.
But how much have you listened to it? Like, every day?
Quite a bit, yeah. It was actually pretty good. I liked Lindsay on Angel, so I bought it.
I like Lindsay.
Because, he was on Angel, and he was on for, like, 2 seasons, then left for a few years, then came back in season 5. And then after Angel ended, he was on Leverage?
Who was he on Angel?
He was Lindsay. He worked for Wolfram and Hart, lost a hand, went on a spirit quest,
came
back with
hands.
The magic tattoos.
Jeez, and that's a deep cut.
But then was there through the last... I won't spoil... If you guys haven't watched Angel and you like Buffy at all, it's definitely worth your time.
Yeah.
Lindsay's there throughout season 5, and the way he exits the show... everybody exits the show in the finale, but the way... He's there through the finale, and that... His last scene is so... I don't know. Can't spoil anything, but it's like... my insides.
That whole last episode of Angel's pretty insidey.
Yeah.
Inside hurty.
Yeah,
it's
that's
mean.
I think what they say in the biz.
Inside hurdy.
I want it more inside hurdy.
That's right. Dave Child, Hollywood insider. He knows how they talk.
I know things.
So, ladies and gentlemen, that's done with the news here. Now we're going to move on to the reason that we all have gathered here.
Ooh.
And made sure that Mr. Dave Child took some time out of his very busy schedule to come in and join us, talk about a series that he not only has read and enjoyed, but also talks about on a weekly basis now that the second season has returned on AMC of Preacher. That is the based on the DC comic book created by Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon.
Yes.
Ran for 75 issues in total, but originally 66 for its official run. Had a couple one-shots and stuff to bump it up to 75.
Yeah. I just read recently about its journey to TV and how many starts and stops it got. Like, it was going to be a movie, and then it was going to be an HBO movie, and then it was going to be an HBO series, and then it was going to have James Marsden as Preacher at one point. And Kevin Smith was going to make a version of Preacher, and he made an Arseface mask and everything, and he was like gung-ho, but every time... The studio said, this is way too offensive, and it's going to piss off so many religious people that we just can't afford to do it. And so they pull the plug every time. So good on you, AMC, for just being like, let's do it. Let's just offend as many people as possible, because that's kind of what Preacher's all about.
Well, I feel like the timing was right for a show like it, but also I feel like the timing was very right to let Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg be the people to take a shot at doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just such a shame that Hellblazer, or Constantine as most people know it by the name.
Take your drinks.
Drinks at home there, guys.
Take your shots. She was able to say Constantine.
It didn't get a shot on a network like AMC where it would have fit. And we would be, because every time I watch Preacher, there's still that part of me that's like, they should have done this with Constantine.
To be fair, I think they also should have done it with Constantine in the tone of Preacher.
Yeah.
That's as intense as that. Constantine was very light.
Yeah.
Except for the actor who was great. Everything was kind of done with kid gloves.
Everything felt so clean. And, I really like Matt Ryan as Constantine as well, and I'm glad that it seems like DC is keeping him in-house to play that part wherever they can use him. But the whole thing felt so clean that no matter how good a job he was doing, it felt a little bit like I was watching somebody in Constantine cosplay.
Right.
More than I was watching John Constantine, the character, brought to life.
Hmm. Yeah. And Preacher is really all about... It makes me feel like... It feels like it's written by an angsty, disgruntled 13-year-old who's sitting in youth group and is just drawing dicks in his Bible. like the entire time. It kind of has that feeling to it.
It does. Like my exposure to Preacher is really limited to the first season of the show, and I picked up on that watching the show as well. That there's a lot that's happening that is so you could, and I mean this in a complimentary fashion, but that feels juvenile, but is so mixed in with the most like dirty, borderline offensive, graphic, scuzzy business.
Yeah,
and I feel like that's a really fun. Now, of course, like anything else, your mileage is probably going to vary wildly. But for me, there's a sweet spot right in the middle of the juvenile and the scuzzy that I really enjoy.
Yeah. That's called my brain.
Yeah, well, very Lucretia. Yeah. That whole series.
For those of you that aren't familiar with the series, basically it's the idea of Jesse Custer. Because Jesse Custer is a preacher who becomes possessed by Genesis, which is a an entity that is the creation of a coupling between an angel and a demon. Yeah. And it takes over him, and he assembles like the voice of God. He could basically say anything to anybody, and he has total command over them. They have to do what he says.
Yeah, and you get the feeling that God himself is, for one, he seems to be on a vacation of some sort, but he's also afraid of Genesis and the power of Genesis. And so this is kind of a new being that is both a completely good and completely evil that has power over God himself and different religious and spiritual elements. And I think that's what the series is really about, is about the moral gray area between what you decide is right and what you decide is wrong, playing off idealism and the idealistic American spirit. Like American Gods, which I also did a AfterBuzz for, the new series. But it was written by someone who is an American, who is Irish, Garth Ennis, and he wrote it kind of as he sees American idealism and how he kind of sees the American kind of West and culture of the West, and taking that off as a jumping point to talk about also the idealism of religion and morality and how what is right. Like, is the church always right? Is the government always right? Are people that believe they're fighting for America always right? And so the whole thing is the discussion between that. Plus, it has a lot of dick jokes and fart jokes and ass jokes and stuff. And that helps it as well. It helps it, like, you're able to have fun while you're kind of exploring these kind of heavier topics.
It's like you come for the big ideas, you stay for the guy who literally has an ass for a face.
That's true. Yeah. I was like, you come for the big ideas, you stay for the literal cum. That's some of the pages.
So certainly with something, when you're adapting a property like this, or it's how faithful should you be to the source material? And so, Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg really took a different tact.
Isn't the first season, and again, I say this having only seen the first season of the show, I haven't seen the premiere for season two yet, and I haven't read the books. To my understanding, season one functions almost as a prequel of sorts to what we see in the series?
It kind of does, but what it does that I really liked is it added a storyline that happens much later in the books.
Is it with
Meat
that
man?
Yeah, that the big dude that we occasionally check in with.
The big dude.
The Saint of Killers?
Yeah. No, I guess he does come a little later, but he's kind of comes sort of.
He's right out of the gate because he's in the first arc.
Saint of Killers. And by the way, we couldn't call him Saint of Killers the entire first season because they didn't name him Saint of Killers. Yeah. So we had to keep calling him like the cowboy and the gunslinger. Yeah. And it peeved us off. Also, I always want to say the Saint of All Killers. I don't know why.
It sounds better that way.
It sounds better coming out of your mouth, but when it's written, it kind of looks more efficient when it's Saint of Killers. So if I slip and say Saint of All Killers, don't shoot me with your God gun.
Just tweet at him.
At Dave Childs.
Sure. With your God gun. It took that storyline of the Meat Man, which is kind of a silly, very cartoony story in the books that happens later, and it brings it to the forefront and puts it in Anvil itself. And Anvil was just kind of seen as a kind of ho-bunk debauchery town, and they're all gathered in the this is the first issue, so I feel like I can say this, but they're all gathered in the church when Genesis hits Jesse, and it kills all of them immediately. Now, instead of doing that in the series, you see an entire season where you get to meet Anvil and how the different shades of Anvil, and they use the Meat Man as kind of a way to discuss that. And he's also the guy, he plays Rorschach in
Jackie Earle Haley. Yes. Yeah, he's
he
great.
Is so good. And he actually makes him very, he makes him like just very grounded. And the problems that he has, he's a guy that in the book, he's like, he's fucking meat. Like, he's fucking like a big thing of meat. Can I not say that word?
No, you can say it.
We're marked explicit. We're great.
Yeah. No. Okay, good. Good. Because he's fucking meat. And like a big woman he made out of meat. And that's not what happens in the series. Mm. Like, in the series, he's talking about meat. He's talking about people and the family he's lost. Like, they're meat. So they actually kind of evolve it a bit into more of a serious discussion. And kind of take it back from the kind of silliness that the comic sometimes dives into.
What I also really liked, and I'll try to shy away from specifics for people who haven't seen the show yet, but what I really liked, and I'm pulling from memory, I only watched this as it was airing, but Jesse's power, he's got the voice of God, so he can tell somebody to do something, and they are forced almost as if God is guiding them to do whatever he commands. Yeah. And I really like this idea, and I like that we get to it in season one, that we will follow your commands, but the way in which we follow that command depends greatly on what our point of view is.
Right. Right. And it's also a very powerful... It's a very powerful power. And he can abuse it if he wanted to. And so Jesse's morality becomes a big focus of the books and also the show, because he tries to decide when to use the voice, when not to use the voice, and it's a big discussion of when can he abuse his power and when is it good to use his power. So that's what I really like from the books. And I actually started reading the books out of the library because I was like, I guess I was a big Sandman fan and I liked all this Vertigo stuff, but in high school especially, I felt like I was too artistic to like Preacher. Like, it had all the dick jokes and fart jokes. I'm like, I can't like this, but I kept getting it out of the library and reading every single version. And it's the only comic I ever went and made sure to take out of the library every single week without buying it, because I should have just bought it. And I now own all of them because I'm like, yeah, dick jokes and fucking meat is great. But, there, and so I enjoy having them, but there was a time when I was like, oh, I'm a Sandman boy. I like Sandman, and I can't go for this low Preacher stuff. But it's just as good because it plays off mythology in the same way, and also questions of the church and all that stuff.
Yeah, and when you grow up in the Bible Belt and you're the weird kid who is not allowed to hang out with the other kids because your dad's the strip club DJ and right. your mom sells loot, but not the fun kind, you
this
ride
is all
your
hypothetical.
Little, yeah, you ride your little bike to the comic book store in elementary school, and then of course this Preacher, and then you start reading it and realizing how blasphemous it is, which is really funny, and then the dick and fart jokes. I was like, I love this. That and Hellblazer was what I read growing up, and I was way too young to read either one of them, and I even had a Jesse Custer action figure from that store.
That's awesome.
he was one of my favorite toys.
Yeah. Well, certainly, we're talking a lot about the story, but and certainly in a comic book, you need to have the art to be able to back it up, and Steve Dillon does a fantastic job on this.
Good.
Because there's a lot of, as we're talking about like the dick and fart jokes, but there's a lot of outlandish... a lot of outlandish action that happens in this, and Steve Dillon's art really grounds it, so it makes you buy into everything.
And he also, one thing that sometimes isn't always able to happen is he did the art for the entire series, if I'm not mistaken. And that's something that you only see in like Saga nowadays or something, because usually they have to get it out the door pretty fast. So it's not always that they have it so tied into a artist and writer working on it, just the two of them the entire time.
Yeah, and like Saga, they have like these built-in breaks, but Steve Dillon is fast enough that they were able to maintain for the most part a monthly schedule throughout this whole entire run, except for the occasional one-shots that they'd bring in.
Yeah, and it's a really good series, so I really recommend reading it. There's also, I guess we should also talk about the other main characters besides just Jesse. You also have Cassidy, who's an Irish, he's kind of the fill-in for, I think, Garth Ennis in a lot of ways in the actual book, but he's an Irish immigrant vampire who, through his eyes, we're able to see more of... we're able to see all of America kind of way back to when he first immigrated. and you get kind of a sense of, like, kind of America through an immigrant's eyes. Well, with Jesse, we see it through, like, the most idealistic white guy.
Right.
Who worships John Wayne to the point where he sees John Wayne appear to him and have invisible conversations, which is not in the series.
Yeah. So it's like a True Romance, where Christian Slater is always right. seeing yep. the Elvis ghost.
Yes, it's just like that. Yeah. He sees the ghost of John Wayne all the time and has conversations with him because he's having a conversation with the spirit of America and American West. Because he's always talking about, like, you know, what it means to love America and what that means. And he's always playing with his, with the lighter that his father gave him. And
right.
his father fought for Vietnam. Now, one thing they haven't done in the series yet is kind of find a replacement for Vietnam, yeah. as far as I can tell. So I'm curious about what they're going to do, because we're able to have discussions about what the Vietnam War was in the series. And in the comic book series, and see it through the eyes of his dad, and kind of explore the American idealism that happened within the Vietnam War.
And I feel like obviously the national narrative is different, but and maybe this is just because I go to this because Iron Man did it. But like when they updated Iron Man's origin in the comics, it was Vietnam at one point, and they changed it to Afghanistan.
Right.
Which to me makes the most sense, but it might only make the most sense because Iron Man did it that one time. But I feel like you can explore similar territory by updating it to a war that took place a few decades afterwards.
They haven't done that yet. And in fact, they're kind of making the dad character in the flashbacks maybe kind of bad. Like, we haven't really figured out who the dad is yet in the actual TV show.
Yeah, they show him occasionally in these flashbacks, and they're never anything positive for Jesse.
He hits Jesse in the flashbacks in the show, which was kind of a big moment of kind of fan... I don't know. It kind of peeved me off because he is seen as a very idealistic person to live up to for Jesse. He's trying to be as close to his dad as he can, or his image of his dad. And if in the flashbacks in the show his dad is hitting him, it kind of becomes a bit more questionable. It kind of it's an odd choice to make in a show where he is the side of idealism, and he's always facing stuff that's kind of beating him down and beating his idealism. So it is. I'm curious to see where they go with it, but that is kind of questioned.
Well, yeah, and speaking of like updating characters, I think the one that gets changed most from the comic series to the TV series is Tulip.
Yeah,
sure. And I think for the better.
Yeah,
I think for the better too. She's really I like her in the book, but she is you see a little bit of Garth Ennis's. Maybe not so wokeness when it comes to Tulip.
Maybe not so wokeness.
Yeah, she's very one-dimensional in the comic. And
he tries. Yeah. You see him trying the best he can, but it doesn't quite get there. Like, he talks a lot about... She has conversations about what it means to be a feminist and what it means to be, like, whether to be controlled by the voice and what it means to be in a relationship with Jesse. So she's... kind of trying to be written as a feminist character, but by a guy that doesn't quite get it.
So it sounds like a dude writing about feminism?
It sounds like a dude writing about feminism. And I do like her, and I like the relationship that she has with Jesse, because it's kind of on and off again, but it is very... It is... Often she's... And she is a badass. She's really good at a gun. And they do build up her relationship with her father... But you do get a sense that she's only good with a gun because of her connection to her father. And she's kind of a tomboy, so she kind of has more masculine elements, which is why she's so badass. And that's kind of problematic as a woke boy myself.
Sure.
But in the show, she's a lot more developed. And she is, for one, she's white in the books. And she's black in the show. And I think that adds another element to America, since we're seeing it through the eyes of these three characters. In the books, we see it through the eyes of an immigrant vampire, and who's been there for hundreds of years. And then also the eyes of a woman and the eyes of an idealistic white guy. So now we see it through the eyes of an idealistic white guy, an immigrant who's been there for hundreds of years, and a black woman who is a lot more diverse and kind of complex perspective of America.
Yes, and who's also played by Ruth Negga, who is brilliant.
She's really good. Like, and it's amazing to watch her in this and then watch Loving, where she's where also she's really good
brilliant.
In.
Brilliant.
That was an Oscar-worthy role, and I don't know why she didn't win for that, but she's really good.
Yes, agreed. And I remember being a fan of hers. I saw her, the first time I really noticed her was probably Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes.
And then she left Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. midway through season two to go, I think to go, if not to go do Preacher, then to just go pursue other projects. And I as much as I miss her on S.H.I.E.L.D., it was like, okay, if you're not going to get the opportunity to really stretch your wings the way you can and should be able to here, then yes, you should move on. And ultimately, I'm glad she did, because we get performances like her work in Loving, like her work as Tulip. And also, we've been talking about the show and the book, like we haven't name-checked Dominic Cooper yet, who is tremendous as well in the lead role. And like somebody else I know originally I know primarily from Marvel stuff too, where he plays Howard Stark in Captain America and also on Agent Carter.
Yeah.
And it's escaping me now. What is the actor who plays Cassidy?
Joseph Gilgun.
Thank you.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
He is so perfect casting. Yeah. It's creepy. It's like he was born to play Cassidy. Because he's already Irish, right? Or is he?
Yeah, he's Irish, I believe.
Yeah, and he's just like, he looks like the character. It's so spot on. He has the same sense of humor. He's my favorite part of the show.
Yeah, I would agree with that. As much as I love the character of Jesse, and I love Dominic Cooper, I never would have thought of that casting, but he's been perfect. But Joseph is really the standout that I'm just like, it's almost, this is exactly what you thought of when you thought of Cassidy.
Yeah.
Now, the relationship between Cassidy and Tulip takes a turn in the comic book series later down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like the transitioning it to the TV series and adapting that, I think they did a good job about planting those seeds early.
Yeah.
That it's not going to seem as out of left field nor as creepy as it does.
It's creepy and super out of left field. I think it's still going to feel, I hope it still feels creepy when it does kind of come to fruition, when I think later down the line, because there is the friendship between, the bromance between Jesse and Cassidy is pretty strong in the comics, and they're building it in the show right now. But when the Tulip kind of love triangle works in, it kind of comes out of nowhere in the comics, and it's a big surprise, and it's also which they're kind of building the seeds of right now. So I'm curious to see where they go with it, because it puts a knife in the relationship in the series is also really good, because the creepiness is good. And it makes it so, it makes this character that we've grown to love adds a whole new dimension to him. So I'm curious to see how they handle that in the show when they're building a character in an age where it's very important to be woke and kind of careful with how you treat women. And what he does in the comic, it's not going to fly.
No.
So it's going to be interesting to see where they go with that.
One, I think, too, you talk about the bromance between the two lead male characters. And I feel like we didn't really get there in season one. We get to a place of understanding and like we are uneasy allies by the end of season one. But I feel like they spend a lot of the first season almost circling each other like tigers, and then occasionally getting into scrapes where they both should die and don't. And then bouncing back being like, we should have died and we didn't. This is great.
Yeah.
And then continuing to circle each other like tigers.
Well, let me ask you about this, especially for you, Dave, is that it is a widely different take on the material for the comic book series. Pretty much starts in media res, as we're mentioning, and we kind of watch them go forward once Genesis is right there and they're off and running. This, we build this whole first season, basically prelude, with other than the addition of the Quinn Cannon stuff in there to kind of mix it up a little bit. It's essentially a lot of prelude. Uh-huh. Did you feel like, in reading the comic book series, that you appreciated having this backstory added into it?
I mean, the one thing I gotta say about that first season is I think it's better to binge watch it now than to watch it when it was coming out season week by week, because it's very slow pacing. And especially if you're a reader of the book, you kind of know they're setting up all these characters that aren't going to be around for the second season.
Right.
And so you're watching it and you're just kind of like, where are they going with this? Like, why are they taking so long just to get to it?
Do you feel like maybe on the part of AMC that had to do, and maybe on the part of Rogan and Goldberg as well, but do you feel like maybe that had to do with a mentality of maybe we need to walk people into this world a little more gradually?
I think so, and also I think it's a case of, it's a road story. It's where they're visiting America, they're hitting different parts of America. You can't do that in a first season all the time unless you prove yourself. So by having the first season take place in all one town, it makes it easier to maybe get the budget for the next season
right.
to actually have multiple locations that they go to, which is now this season so far has been really great. I haven't watched the second episode yet because we're talking about that next week, so I want to keep it fresh for next week. But the first episode was really strong. It felt like the books. It felt like they're building up stuff that's important that happens in the books, like all of the Lengel family, which is connected to Custer and his kind of the family that is tied to him and his redneck family that becomes a big part of the story. They're starting to build seeds of it. There's a great reference to just like in that first episode, the bubbling, that bubbling chest in the back. I think they're like, great, they're going to go that dark. They're going to go that crazy with Custer's origin story, and that's still coming up, and so I'm super excited for this season. I think they're finally on track.
Yeah, and I do agree that last season was a little slow, but I felt like they knew what they were doing, so I was letting it breathe. Right. And to me, the finale of last season was one of the best finales I had seen. Great. I mean, it just set it up so well. And then these first two episodes, I've actually watched both of them. I'm just really impressed with how they've gone.
Also, what they're doing with Arsface is very interesting.
So that was going to be the next thing. Like, just to tag up on your point, I will say, having not seen the first two episodes of season two yet and having not read the books, I was blown away by the audacity of setting up all of this town and all of these characters in the first season only to obliterate spoilers for season one, only to obliterate all of it in the finale. I thought, like, what a ballsy move that is. The very next thing I wanted to make sure that I asked you guys about is talk to me about Arsface, because I remember when they announced this show, I remember there being a lot of discussion about how do we adapt this character in a way that we can actually depict on a network that isn't, say, an HBO or a Showtime. And I remember thinking to myself as I was reading about what this character is, a character who, for all intents and purposes, looks like he literally has an asshole for a face. I went, all right, I've heard of Preacher. It's something I'm going to get to because his reputation is so strong. I didn't know whether or not I was going to prioritize watching the show. And as soon as I read Guy Has an Asshole for a Face, I went, I got to give this at least an hour.
And the Funko Pop is adorable. I should have brought it with me. I've got the whole set.
And he's like, and he's just as sweet in the comics as he is in the show. And they're building up the sweet person. He's a lot uglier in the comics. He's like actually like a good looking guy with just an asshole mouth in the show. But in he is messed up in the comics. And you also have to remember that the comics took place in the 90s. So it deals with a lot of 90s problems. Like Arsface was the reason why he looks like Arsface is because he tried to kill himself like Kurt Cobain.
Okay.
So, but he missed. So that's why he looks like Arsface. Now, he has a different origin in the show, and I think they've hinted at it, but they haven't quite said what it was. Am I right?
they never really truly said what happened with him and
the girl.
And that, you know, she, like, obviously had been shot, too, or something. They never even said shot, because she was just basically in a coma.
My hope is that they're building up that he maybe was involved in a shooting, like the school shooting type of thing. Which is a lot more of the issues we're dealing with now.
Right.
And I'm curious to see what they do with it. Also, in the series, in this season at least, it looks like he's kind of filling in for John Wayne.
For John Wayne, yeah.
So, because he's appearing to Custer now as a guilty conscience, while he's not stuck in... Well, he's not stuck at the end of where he is at the end of season one in the books. He actually becomes kind of a pop culture new Kurt Cobain himself
in the books.
So I'm curious, I hope that kind of still happens in the show, but we'll see.
So now, of course, as I mentioned, all in total around 75 issues, 66 for the series and then the one shots. When it all comes down to a story told like that, the importance is how do you stick the landing. Do you feel like were you satisfied with how Preacher the series stuck the landing? Do you feel like, wait, I think the TV series is going to have to address some issues because maybe the comic book series didn't quite stick it?
I personally thought it was perfect. I thought, like, the ending of it was just spot on. They never build anything up that they don't address Red at the end, all the characters kind of come together, the Saint of Killers and that they've had from issue one and from the very beginning to Genesis to Cassidy to Jesse to Tulip. They all have a role to play in the final, like, the final ends of the episode, and Air Star, who I can't wait till we get to in the show, and the Guild. Is it the Guild? It's yeah. That I love all of that stuff, and they end it kind of perfectly, and I'm curious to see how they do in the show.
All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it. Let's give a big round of applause for the man of the hour.
Thank you.
An hour is diminishing. The man of the millennium.
Thank you.
Mr. Dave Child. That's
the Time magazine cover that hangs in all of Dave Child's hotels.
They're all fake.
But I want to, really quick, as we're wrapping, though, I really want to ask all of you guys, Frank, in a world where, as you mentioned, it feels like there's never enough time to read everything that you want to read, I want to ask all three of you, both for myself and also for people listening who haven't checked this series out, I fully intend to read Preacher at some point, but my list is yards long. Why should our listeners prioritize this series? Why should we make sure to get to it sooner rather than later?
You know, it's really not a hard read. It's, you know, like we say, 75 issues, and it's got dick and fart jokes, man.
Yeah, you're going to have fun with all the dick and fart jokes and the violence and the shooting. And then at the same time, you're going to have fun with all the mythology and the religion that they kind of play with. And especially if you like, if you like American Gods, but you feel like it could be a bit more punk, this is a good version of it.
Okay.
You know, if you wanted to have a bit more flip off the man feel to it and freak out the normies, this is a good book for that. So it's, if you want to anger your parents, this is a great book. So if... read this if you really want to piss off those parents.
And if there's one thing I seek to do every morning when I roll out of bed, it's what can I do to make mom and dad sad inside?
Well, and one reason also to read it is that I feel like Rogan and Goldberg are not going to be so beholden to the source material.
True.
They've already shown in the first season that they're willing to tweak and change some stuff. So it's going to be, I think they're going to very much inform each other reading each other.
And it's also a good of its time period, too. So and it's before 9/11, and I think that's kind of important. That it talks about American idealism before 9/11 happened. And so what if you read it and then you watch a show that's after 9/11 and after all that, we've gone through a very long war, I think you get to kind of compare and contrast and see where we were in the 90s compared to where we are now. And I think that alone is a reason to read it.
Cool. So, ladies and gentlemen, that has been this episode of the Comic Book Exchange. But, you know, the fun doesn't stop here. Just get started.
Oh, no.
No. You can like us on Facebook. For everything that's holy, please go on to iTunes and give those ever so critical 5 stars to keep Lex Beckel alive.
He's so sad.
The long con is fancy hats. Nothing will fill that emptiness more than like a big fancy ornate headdress.
You know, I think it's because you're making your parents sad that you're now sad. I'm just saying there might be a circular.
I'm gonna lay on your couch under the big Time magazine cover with Dave Child on it.
Please.
You can also subscribe to the YouTube channel. And thanks everybody for hopping in the chat. And if you want to continue the conversation with us even after the show's over, Lucretia Lyon, where can they find you?
Hey guys, since I'm Lucretia Lyon, you can always find me anywhere on the internet at LACRETIALYON, since there is only one.
I am all over social media at the Lex Michael.
And I'm Dave Child. You can find me at MRDaveChild or DaveChild.com. My name's Dave Child. Yay. I also want to plug, follow me on Preacher, as we talk about Preacher, on Mondays. It's a weird schedule this season, but on Mondays we're going to be there talking about Preacher. And also, I have a new short film that's up at the very top of my Twitter. It's the pinned tweet, so watch that. I'm trying to get more people to watch it. So thank you.
There you go. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. I was supposed to be doing Preacher with Dave Child this season, and it's moved to Mondays. It's precluded that.
Blame AMC. I think I'm worried they're messing up because it was on Sundays, and the first episode was on Sunday, the second episode is on Monday, and now it's going to be every Monday, and it's just confusing.
How dare they? Yeah. But ladies and gentlemen, you'll be able to catch all four of us reunited, though, this fall when we break down the Legends of Tomorrow. There you go. All four of us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not four. That's four. All four.
Visual aid.
That's right. Thank you, everybody. Until next week, folks, we'll see you back right here on Book Circle Online with another episode of the Comic Book Exchange. Speed off.
Bye-bye.
editor Jason Squamata, executive producers Maria Menounos, Phil Svitek, and Kevin Undergaro. We would like to thank you for tuning in to Book Circle Online. For more discussion, go to bookcircleonline.com. And if you have comments, questions, or book title suggestions, write us at info@bookcircleonline.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this is Book Circle Online. BCO, join the circle.